We have two more presentations from the Department of Ag. We will also have a couple of bills later this morning. And we have, I believe it's Minnesota Farm Bureau Day on the Hill from chapters in northwestern Minnesota. So if you have some people that might be coming down from there, it is National FFA Week as well. So if you have any opportunity to connect with your FFA members from your district, you want to do that. And we are, if you're following along in your budget books, we're starting on page 29, I believe. But in, if you had the handout, you either put it in your save folder or you put it in your budget, and I'm starting on page 24 for the PowerPoint. So with that, we're going to have Nicole Neisser and Catherine Simon from the Dairy and Meat Inspection Division. They'll be the ones presenting. So first, Nicole will be up first, and the director of the division. So welcome to the committee. We'll just introduce yourself, and then you can begin your presentation.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Dr. Nicole Neisser. I am the director of the Dairy and Meat Inspection Division with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm a veterinarian by training with a public health specialty, and I've been the director of this division for, three or four years now. And so I'm just going to do a brief overview of the Dairy and Meat Inspection Division, which is probably one of our more focused divisions at the Department of Agriculture with a smaller sort of realm of responsibility, but many of our programs are mandated by federal or state law, and so I'll talk about those requirements and some of the things we do for that these programs. All right, so our job is to ensure the safety of dairy and meat products, as well as we also do egg inspection. So kind of tell people usually animal products are our area of specialty here. And we do regulatory-based inspection work that are necessary to meet standards required for commerce. And so for dairy, that means that most of our inspection work is based on the need to meet specific standards for interstate commerce. So, for example, for a dairy plant that bottles milk, they have to have inspections at a certain frequency, and they have to meet certain standards in order to sell those products across state lines. For meat inspection, a lot of that work that we do is for intrastate commerce. So we're doing work so that meat processors and farmers in Minnesota can sell their products in Minnesota. The USDA covers the interstate aspect of that, so we do the intrastate. So we're largely working with small and very small processors in the meat side. We also do response to emergencies and outbreaks, and I'll also talk about a few smaller programs that we do. Most of our work is done with regulatory-based inspections. Our scope of inspection is everything from the farm, so dairy farms, to manufacturing, so processing plants, milk, cheese, ice cream, as well as sort of the in-between parts of those industries, tanker inspections, milk haulers, samplers, and those kinds of things. We also have a fairly extensive sampling program where we're collecting product samples to monitor product safety, testing for pathogens like salmonella and E. coli on a relatively regular basis. We also place quite a bit of emphasis on outreach and educational activities with both farmers and manufacturers. As you might imagine, the regulations around these two areas in particular are fairly complex and seem like they're getting more complex all the time. And so we really focus on trying to help people through that process. If they want to start a dairy plant, for example, we try to provide resources for them so that they can take all the necessary steps that they need to and start off in compliance and help them understand what they need to do. In the past couple of years, we've actually started a couple of certified industry inspection programs where we're certifying industry people to perform some basic inspection work, which helps us takes the burden off of us of doing inspections sort of at odd hours, weekends, like in the middle of the night kind of thing. It also helps the industry because we're able to train the industry folks on the food safety aspects of what they're doing, and we view that as a win-win. So, for example, we train some certified industry inspectors at trucking companies to inspect their own tankers. And we have an oversight process for that to make sure those folks know what they're doing and know what they're looking for. And we've actually, through that program, probably accomplished twice as many inspections as we would have if we were just doing those. And I feel like we have folks at those companies that are very conscientious about looking for food safety and cleaning kinds of things. Like I said, we do quite a bit of outreach. We work to provide guidance to new operators on how to meet the requirements. And then kind of the last thing is that we do quite a bit of issuing of certificates. We call them certificates of free sale or certificates of export for Minnesota dairy and meat companies that want to sell their products internationally. They typically need a certificate that says they're licensed in Minnesota or that their products meet the standards and those kinds of things. All right, so as I mentioned, dairy and meat inspection are major program areas and therefore also the major areas where we have funds. Our division has 51.4 full-time equivalents with 55 employees. Many of those employees work across programs, particularly in the office or the support roles that we have, as well as outreach. Our outreach folks are typically working across program areas. For our dairy inspection program, we have little over 13 FTEs that do field inspections. So those are the sort of boots on the ground, in the farm, on the farms, in the plants, folks that conducted over 8,000 inspections in the last two fiscal, actually, that would have been one calendar year's worth of inspections. We actually have a few less FTEs in that area because we have a few less dairy farms, as I'm sure you've heard, and that definitely influences the need for sort of those boots on the ground. in meat inspection, we have 16.5 field inspection FTEs that conducted over 9,000 inspections in the last calendar year as well. We also, on our staff, we have compliance officers, operations folks who support the field staff. We have outreach staff, auditors who perform federally required audits that we have to do on our own state programs, obviously the supervisors, and a couple of veterinarians that perform key roles, particularly with meat inspection. Our funds are split fairly evenly between general dedicated accounts and, the federal funding that we have, and I'll go over each program next. So for dairy inspection, we inspect dairy farms, manufacturers, both sort of grade B or manufacturing plants and grade A plants, and tankers and haulers. So for dairy farms, we inspect grade A dairy farms twice a year, and we are at about 2,600 grade A dairy farms as of February 1, and I'll just emphasize those are the number of permits that we have. It's not necessarily equal to the number of geographical locations, because sometimes there's more than one permit on a farm. For example, they might have cows and goats on their farm, or maybe there's two brothers on a farm and they maintain two permits or something like that. So those are the number of permits that we have. And then as of February 1st, we had 190 grade B farms. That number tends to fluctuate fairly significantly about 80 to 100 of our grade B farms are goat farms, and they're all pretty much all seasonal. So they go off in the fall and they come back. And so we're sitting at about 70, 80, probably when we're sort of at full force, we'll probably be around 100 goat farms in the state. And that does tend to fluctuate a lot by year based on demand for the cheese and those kinds of things too. Grade B farms are inspected once a year. And I mentioned grade A farms are inspected twice a year. Those are federally mandated inspection frequencies that we have to maintain. Manufacturing plants, we're at 67 manufacturing plants that we inspect twice a year, both the plant sanitation as well as to make sure testing equipment, to make sure pasteurizers are working effectively. And then grade A plants, we have just under 50 of those, and we inspect those four times a year. And we actually, despite the number of farms decreasing, we're actually seeing sort of an influx of smaller plants that has sort of maintained an increasing trend over the past couple of years. You know, I think 2 years ago when I talked here in this committee, we had like 10 plants waiting, and we're still seeing, you know, those kinds of small plants come on board because they're looking for niche markets and trying to find other ways to capture profit. Our budget for fiscal years 20 and 21, we're projecting at about $2.3 million general fund and $5.185 on the ag fund. We typically run about one-third general fund, two-thirds fee-funded. Those fees come from primarily dairy processors. There's a procurement fee that's about 1 cent per hundredweight of milk procured from farms, as well as a processor fee that both in and out of state plants sell to sell grade A products at retail in Minnesota. And then a smaller portion of that comes from inspection fees for farms, basically a $45 inspection fee for a grade A farm and a $25 inspection fee for a grade B farm. Those fees fluctuate based on farm numbers, so that portion of the fees goes down, but milk production has remained steady, so our procurement fees have filled in some of those gaps. As I mentioned, the current trends are fewer dairy farms but increased number of small dairy plants, and goat milk production has continued to increase relatively steadily over the past few years. Our inspections are done for safety, and as I mentioned, they're required for interstate commerce. Minnesota participates in the National Conference of Interstate Milk Shippers, which is a body of all 50 states where we manage programs to ensure each state is enforcing the same rules and regulations, and the pasteurized milk ordinance, make sure we're all sort of on a level playing field, and therefore we're required to meet inspection frequencies and certain standards in order to sell grade A products across state lines.
Just since you paused there, Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, you mentioned that some dairy operations, smaller ones, may shut down in the wintertime. For example, you mentioned goats, grade B. If a farm dries up their cows in the fall and comes back in the spring, do they have to basically start over as far as having their wells tested, things like that, before they can resume milking again?
Back to me, sir.
Madam Chair and Representative, the answer to that question is a little bit complicated because it depends on the standard. For example, wells will not need to be retested. Those sample results are good for 3 years, and so we continue those through. They will have to have another inspection when they come back on, and they would have to pay the regular inspection fee that goes along with that. And it depends on how long they've been dried off. So believe it or not, often we have farms that will dry off, and in less than 30 days, they're back on. And that's their season, that's their window, which is pretty short. And those farms, that's just a continued permit. They don't need a new permit. But if they're over, typically, if they're a seasonal dry off, we usually give them 60 days instead of that 30-day window. Once we get past the 60, we kind of run into problems with the requirements for the interstate milk shippers of having samples at certain windows, and so we'll typically give them 60 days to maintain a permit without having to have a new inspection. But there's no like extra sampling that's required or anything like that.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Just one more quick one then. Who certifies organic? You haven't mentioned organic dairies yet. Is that in your purview?
Madam Chair and Representative, the actually organic certification is done through USDA. We don't do any certification work or any anything different for organic farms, and so that's a sort of completely different program. And I believe that is USDA AMS or through third-party certifiers. The standards are the same for traditional and organic farms.
I don't see any other questions right now, so you can continue.
A All right, Madam Chair and members, I'll move on to meat and poultry inspection. Meat and poultry inspection, we have in Minnesota what's called the Minnesota Equal to Meat Inspection Program, and that equal to means that we're equal to USDA Food Safety Inspection Service in what we do, and we run a cooperative program with the USDA for this purpose. And this allows small plants in Minnesota to wholesale their products in Minnesota. It also allows livestock producers who take their animals to be slaughtered under the inspection services of this program to sell their products to anyone they want to in Minnesota. This type of inspection is a little bit different than a lot of the other inspection programs that we talk about, where dairy we're talking about going in once or twice a year, and other types of food manufacturers might be once a year. This is what's called daily inspection or continuous inspection, and so it's much higher intensity inspection, where every animal that goes to the slaughter plant and is slaughtered under inspection is viewed both before slaughter and after slaughter by the inspector. And so our inspectors may spend an entire day at a plant, and oftentimes they do. They'll have schedules at these small plants where they might be there 2 days a week inspecting animals that they're slaughtering there. And then for non-slaughter activities, such as making hams and bacons, and we've moved a lot into sort of more non-traditional meat products, like even school meals and things like that, our inspector is expected to go to that plant every day that they're operating, at least once during that shift. So, for example, if they operate Monday to Wednesday under inspection, our inspector would need to go every day of that week 5 times. And so we do a lot of inspections. So some of our inspectors might do 6 or 8 inspections a day on those days, or they might go to one plant and do slaughter all day in one of those plants. We also do what's called custom-exempt inspections. So these are commonly sort of, most people kind of think of this as your local rural butcher shop, where a farmer would bring an animal into the plant and they would have it slaughtered for their own use. They would get the meat back and it would be stamped as not for sale. So those products can't be sold, and there's no inspector there at the time of those animal slaughter. We do periodic inspections, typically 1 to 4 times a year based on their risk ranking. So, for example, a Minnesota Equal To plant where we're there twice a week or 3 times a week, you know, we may do an official custom inspection once a year because we need to, but we're already in that plant doing that. But other plants we may do 4 times a year based on, you know, any issues we've identified. So typically it's between 1 and 4 times a year. These kinds of plants have also become popular for direct marketing. So you may hear this as, I bought a half of a cow and, you know, the farmer took it to so-and-so a plant. And those types of operations are not done under inspection. Essentially, the person who purchased the cow is the owner of that animal, and so therefore they're paying that plant for a service. And that's become very, very popular as well.
Mr. Just before you go on, I think Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would an example of those be like Longchen in South St. Paul?
Definitely,
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, actually, there's also sort of a newer model of custom exempt, which is we call live animal markets. So someone would go to the market, and the live animals would be at the market, and someone would choose what they wanted, and then they would pay the plant for the animal. Now they're the owner of the animal, and then they would pay the plant for the service, and then it would be slaughtered right there on site with them. And so we've gotten, you know, we probably have a good 4 or 5 plants, and some of them are actually quite large that operate like that.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Perhaps, Madam Chair, that's fairly close. It might be a good tour.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. I believe when Representative Hamilton, I know we've taken a tour. I've taken a tour there. We had a group, but it is fascinating, very interesting. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director, I believe it was 2015, worked with former Representative Metza on the Northeast Correctional Facility, I believe it was. How was that program going?
Dr. Neisser.
Madam Chair, Representative, actually you have a little bit on a slide later on that program, but I can briefly touch on that now. For those of you who don't know, the Northeast Regional Correctional Center is they are Minnesota Equal 2 inspected plants. So they have a meat processing plant on their facility, and they process meat to use in their commissaries as well as some of the other commissaries in that correctional chain or group. And I think, 4 years ago, there was some money provided to create a pilot program for training the inmates at this particular facility in meat processing so that they might have more marketable skills when they leave. And I'm happy to say we're actually completing we've completed at least one full cycle, probably a little longer, of sort of the full program as to what we can do now anyway. And we are seeing folks graduate or leave the correctional facility and get positions at meat processors in the northeast part of Minnesota. In fact, I just offhand anecdotally, I know of one meat processor that's hired six folks from that program. So,
Thank you. All right, Dr. Nacer, you can continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So our budget is essentially a 50-50 state general fund federal fund split. We've had a couple of issues in the past couple of years with the federal side of that funding. This is a budget that USDA doesn't sort of allocate to us up front, like before the federal fiscal year starts, and so we're subject to fluctuation as they have continuing resolutions, and they're only able to allocate a certain amount of funds based on their budgeting issues. And so we've had a little bit of a challenge getting our 50%. Now, last year that was completely rectified, so I'm happy to say of federal fiscal 18, they gave us everything we asked for, and I fully expect that's going to happen this year as well. But it is basically a 50-50 split, even though those numbers, the 2.6 and the 3.4, there is a in-kind general fund or in-kind indirects that the state provides that we don't have to have a cash for. It's not a cash contribution. So that is 50-50. And as part of that 50-50 split, the program is heavily audited by USDA to make sure we meet certain standards. And so one of those standards is continuous inspection, and so we need to make sure we have adequate resources to ensure we have inspectors at all the plants at the appropriate times. And that can be challenging when new plants want to come on inspection. We need to make sure we have enough resources to provide services when they need them. The kinds of trends we're seeing in meat inspection, we see more and more ethnic or non-traditional slaughter and processing. We talked about live animal markets. That's definitely something we see more of. Those are custom exempt, so we don't actually have to have an inspector there all the time, although we're hearing some musings that some of those might even want to go under inspection for equal to. I think one thing that's really impacted us lately is that the federal regulations have become much more complex. So it's challenging for our staff because the enforcement we need to do is based on very complex regulations, but it's very challenging for the plants to meet the requirements. For example, their HACCP food safety plan. They just have to have more in-depth things. And so we try to focus a lot of our effort on outreach, trying to make sure folks get the information that they need. And whether or not it's a result of that, we are seeing more and more compliance issues. So sort of those folks that are not complying with the inspection requirements, they're not under inspection, but maybe they should be, or they're required to be under inspection. And we have had a big increase in those kinds of issues in the past 2 years. Again, we do inspections for safety. These inspections are required for wholesaling products. And then if you're a farmer and you want to do sort of more direct marketing that than custom exempt allows, which is typically kind of limited to your half of an animal or a quarter of an animal. If you want to sell something by the pound, you need to have your products inspected.
Just again, as a pause, Representative Bank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned there's a more trend of going to more ethnic or non-traditional slaughter, and there might be a push to more of an equal to inspection. Can you explain why is that?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think the easy answer is they're very popular. They're very busy places, and it's very hard for them to stay in compliance with the custom exempt regulations. And so I think they're seeing a need to go to inspection. It's very hard for them, for example, if they are slaughtering in the summer, we have some places that might slaughter 20,000 chickens a week under custom exempt. As the plant owner, they're expected to, those chickens are supposed to go to people who are going to consume them themselves and not resell them. But as a plant owner, you know, when someone comes in and buys 30 chickens, it's very hard for them to know, you know, well, are you really taking these for yourself, or are you taking them and selling them at your grocery store or something? And so we're seeing quite a few compliance issues where, you know, it's not necessarily the plant owner's fault. It's just that they can't know those kinds of things. And so that sort of pushes them more towards the need for having inspection to ensure they can be in compliance.
Thank you. You may continue.
All right, Madam Chair and committee members, just one more slide. These are some of our smaller programs that we have in our division. I touched already on the Northeast Regional Correctional Institute training program. And we also do a shell egg surveillance program with the USDA. That is a 100% federal reimbursement program. So all the work we do is 100% reimbursed by FDA. We also have a state egg inspection program that we do that is funded through fees. Probably our bigger two small programs. One is a drug residue prevention outreach program, which we recently received a federal cooperative agreement money for that is expected to last about 2.5 years to do outreach on drug residue prevention and appropriate veterinary drug use on farms. And so we've got a couple of staff that are working on that program. This is a continuation of a program we started about 2 years ago, the Minnesota Drug Residue Prevention Program. FDA funded us for an extra 2.5 years for that as of now. We also manage the venison donation program, which is a miscellaneous agency funds that get passed through to us from the DNR. And we administer the program, sign processors up, do the reimbursements, sign charitable organizations up, manage the distribution of venison and that kind of thing.
All right, we have a question. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Neisser, this is just back to thinking about inspection and appeals, or inspection. So if a farmer, dairy farmer, for instance, is inspected and is found out of compliance in a few areas, but doesn't necessarily agree, is there an appeal process for the farmer to go through? And if so, what does that look like?
Dr. Neisser.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, there is an appeal process. If it's a routine inspection and they have items that, you know, the inspector wrote on that for the inspection that they didn't agree with, typically we have them contact the St. Paul office, and there's instructions actually on the inspection paperwork on what to do if they want to appeal. And we'll usually run that first through the supervisor of that, and have the supervisor contact the producer and work with them to see, you know, what the issue is, and if the inspector was wrong, we'll typically overturn that. If we still believe it was a violation and they want to push that, typically that appeal process is an administrative hearing process. And so in order to, you know, get to the point where we would go through the court system, it would be through an administrative hearing. We don't have that happen very often. And we, I would say, most of the time we're able to resolve it on the farm with the supervisor. If there was an enforcement action taken, for example, a producer was suspended, there's also a defined appeal process. And again, that's an administrative process.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so does the supervisor then work with a farmer in that process to kind of help them move into compliance, whether it's an appeal process or not? Does the MDA support farmers in trying to get back into compliance, and what does that look like?
Dr. Neisser.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, actually, in the dairy world, we have dairy field service representatives who are sort of the liaison between MDA and the dairy plant, and so they have a sort of an intermediary role. And so we're going to work, that supervisor and inspector are going to work with that dairy field service representative to help that farmer come into compliance, whether, you know, it means if they have to clean something, you know, try to better define what they need to do to get into compliance, or if there's a equipment issue. Sometimes if it's something that takes a long time or is very expensive, we'll write a compliance agreement or we'll, you know, give an extended deadline. So we're typically relying on that dairy field service representative who works for their dairy plant to help them sort of do the legwork itself. Mm-hmm. But we'll definitely communicate those things through them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doctor, maybe this is out of your wheelhouse, and if it is, I apologize. But thinking about if there's a Minnesota producer that produces eggs, for example, and you didn't mention eggs, so I don't know if this is in your area, but if they want to sell into California, for example, and that state has different requirements for cage sizes, would you get involved in certifying that, or how would somebody go about to meet those standards or certify those standards to sell into California, for example?
Dr. Neisser.
Madam Chair, Representative, we don't do any of those kinds of certifications at MDA. Our inspections are safety-based, and typically, though, those certifications are done by the company working with a third-party certifier. So I actually just talked to someone that was from an egg company that was doing that exact same thing, and they shared how they were working with a third-party certifier to do that so that they could sell into California.
All right. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Doctor, a few years ago, we had delegated communities where they had their own health boards where they're going in and doing inspections. And MDA found out that they were delinquent with those inspections. I remember placing additional dollars towards the Department of Ag so they could go in and take care of that and bring them back into compliance. Are we seeing any issues like that currently?
Dr. Neisser.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm going to ask if we can have Catherine Simon, the Division Director for Food, address that question. That issue was primarily a food inspection issue. Dairy and meat inspection, we actually don't delegate any inspections. We do all inspections. There's no local authorities for the inspection programs that we manage in my division. But Catherine can certainly speak to that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. I think we will conclude then. We don't have any more questions for you. So thank you, Dr. Neisser, and we'll bring up Catherine Simon, the Director of the Food and Feed Safety Division. Welcome to the committee. State your name, and then you may begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. So my name is Catherine Simon. I'm a registered environmental health sanitarian. I am the current director of the Food and Feed Safety Division at the Department of Agriculture. My entire career with the Department of Agriculture has been in the food inspection program. So I'm excited to be able to share with you today. So the Food and Feed Safety Program, we actually cover four different inspection programs. We cover the a commercial feed inspection program, manufactured food, retail food, and a new produce safety program that's in development. The main purpose of our program is to ensure product safety as well as consumer, human consumer and animal consumer protection, and to ensure orderly commerce. On your slides, you'll see the various registrations or licenses that we oversee in the current counts for our licensing year related to those. For our feed program, we have a number of different areas that we inspect. Generally speaking, for commercial feed, it's going to be mills and distribution facilities. Sometimes that'll be elevators. A lot of those inspections, it's going to be based on product safety risk. So a significant issue that has happened in that area has been the Food Safety Modernization Act, which did introduce some new requirements for good manufacturing practices and preventive controls. And so that's a new area that we've been addressing. As part of their inspections, they do additionally product sampling as well as record verification and some of those activities. This program also addresses our pet food industry in Minnesota. So there's manufacturing inspections where they actually inspect where the products are manufactured and distributed, as well as ensuring that those products are appropriately listed and they have the appropriate labeling information in conformance with the requirements. This is a program that also does inspections under federal contract. So while the dairy and meat inspection works quite closely with the USDA, most of our work federally is done with the Food and Drug Administration. So one of our programs, we do inspections under contract for them. So it would be either with FDA authority or joint authority with under our state requirements as well. For our manufactured food program, we cover both food manufacturing as well as food warehousing and distribution. So this is going to be the production of food ingredients as well as finished food products. Again, this is a program that was affected by the Food Safety Modernization Act. It's modernizing the food regulatory requirements, so it's a more preventive-based approach. So rather than being reactive to recalls and other issues, it's to go in and ensure that there's appropriate controls and preventions in place for food safety. Examples of facilities that this will cover, this covers is going to be beverage facilities, canneries, bakeries, and other prepared foods. So, for example, deli items and things like that, and other food raw ingredients. Additionally, they do sampling both of products as well as the environment when appropriate to oversee that. And this is another program that also has those certificates of free sale and exports. And so these are documents that we prepare to ensure that there's access to markets internationally. And again, this also covers warehousing and distribution. So even when it's just finished product, we also ensure that it's handled safely as it's distributed prior to its sale points. This is additionally a program that has federal contracts. This one is done entirely under state authority, but it's joint jurisdiction over these facilities and a significant funding source for this program. For our retail food program, this is one is a little bit different than our commercial feed and manufactured programs. So this operates under the food code. So there is a new version of the food code in 2019 that just came out. And a portion of that requires that there's a specific review of facilities and equipment prior to operation. It's called plan review. And so it's a little bit different. All operations prior to getting licensed are going to have some sort of review, but this one has some a little bit more administrative process related to the rule that it is associated with. They also do facility licensing and inspection. Again, it's going to be based on risk. So we look at the complexity of the handling operations and the potential for there to be food safety concerns, and that drives where we go and how often we're going to go. Examples of facilities are groceries, bakeries, meat departments, delis, convenience stores, and other packaged food operations and stands. So this is the program that has the authority to delegate to local boards of health and cities. And currently, we have 7 delegation agreements, and in that program, we oversee because the work that they complete is supposed to be to the standard that it would be if the state was completing it. So in that program, a significant part of our time in the last couple of years has been addressing our contracts with those programs to ensure that it is risk-based and to ensure that it's adequate so that we can properly go in and evaluate those programs to ensure the replacement of the state work. So that's been quite a bit of effort in the last couple of years has been collaborative work with those agencies to ensure that there's understanding of the contract and that they understand how it is that we'll do those evaluations so that we can complete the rest of the evaluations through this calendar year.
Representative Hamilton, did that answer your question, or did you have another?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it did. I recall where we had a community or a couple of communities that were out of compliance. And we had to, I think we put about $100,000 a year towards that, bringing them back in to compliance. I'm just wondering, has there been any other issues such as that recently?
There has been no issues similar to that scenario in the recent years. But again, a lot of that has to do with us being able to ensure that it's a clear understanding of how it is that we're going to go and do those evaluations so that programs can self-evaluate as well to make sure that it's not just state oversight, but that they have their own self-quality assurance as well.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. All right. You may continue.
So the newest program that we have is our produce safety program. I'll admit that this is, it's quite innovative and exciting for me to be able to share. This is currently funded through a cooperative agreement with the FDA. And again, it's also something that has come out of the Food Safety Modernization Act. So this act very clearly establishes rules and oversight related to growing conditions for produce. That's something that's new and was not explicitly in regulation prior to this. FDA has identified that they may not have the potentially not have the capacity or be the best tool to work with growers, and so they've instituted these cooperative agreements with different states so that they can get the appropriate rollout for this regulation and ensure proper understanding. So a key element of this cooperative agreement is specific focus on outreach and education related to the rule when it comes to interaction with growers and making sure that the information and educational and technical support is there for growers to be successful. So in Minnesota, that's been a clear carry through for our program development in making sure that we're establishing the appropriate stakeholder relationships and collaboration for the design of the program itself, but how to best support services that are working well in Minnesota, not just creating it out of the Department of Agriculture, but using it as an opportunity to support systems that are working well. Again, a key element of this is providing access to education and resources, and so this is specifically grower training on the regulation and how it is that they can have good food safety practices. And so that has been a significant amount of the resources in the last 2 years is making sure that there are the appropriate number of classes available and that they are accessible and around the entire state of Minnesota. Additionally, we actually have to put in place the inspection program. So this is a really unique opportunity for us to develop an inspection program from scratch. So it's taking the rule, working through the appropriate identification of procedures and approach, since a farm inspection for produce safety is going to be very different than, say, inspecting a grocery store. So making sure that we have the appropriate information on where these growers are, controlling seasonality issues, access and communication issues, and delivering reports and ensuring that there's adequate follow-up and communication about it. What's unique about this program is that there is no associated registration or licensing for it. So it's its own unique challenge, but it's a very exciting space to be in. Some additional division roles that we have. We administer the Governor's Food Safety and Defense Task Force. So this is established in statute, and it's a unique collaboration with industry stakeholders in food regarding food safety and defense and consumers and academia. And a new development out of that is a subcommittee called the Food Innovation Team. So this is a specific subcommittee whose design is to help overcome potential challenges regarding licensing or registration or identifying appropriate regulations for innovative approaches, either through innovations in processing or innovations in sales or other challenges that may come about due to different jurisdictional issues. So the example that was brought up is there's some entities that may operate in delegated areas but have manufacturing components. There's a lot of elements that may cross over to our dairy and meat inspection division. And this team is designed to get everybody in a room together to sort out what are available options so that we can have a more collaborative approach, but also ensure that we're overcoming some of the challenges with the regulation. A portion of that is also our oversight of the cottage food registration. So that's also in statute for folks to be able to produce foods from home. It's limited to particular food types. And then it's also for particular sales locations. And so that's an area that we see a lot of overlap with this food innovation team.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I guess my question would be, from your perspective, do you think the cottage food language is adequate? It appears that we continue to come back and address that every year. And if memory serves me correctly, that was once referred to as the pickle bill, because we simply wanted grandma to be able to sell her pickles at church. And now it's seems to be taking a life of its own. So I'd just like to know your perspective on that.
Ms. Simon.
Madam Chair and Representative, I will say that it seems to me like the words on the page are always going to continue to be a challenge. But one of the reasons why is because there's a lot of movement in the food industry. So it's at this point, it's more than just a pickle bill. So it's a combination of non-potentially hazardous foods as well as some specifically identified acidified food items. But there's a lot of folks who are, rather than using this as just a small outlet on the side, it's really a jumping point for people to develop full-scale businesses. And I think it's a good use of this. I think it's because there can be a lot of barrier to getting into full food safety businesses, as I rightly believe there should be in public health, because there's a lot of concerns and impact when it comes to food handling. But I think the challenges that we're seeing, it's because there's a lot of innovation in how it is that people want to create market space. So I think it's less to do with the words on the page. It's just more the space that we're in industry. And I fully believe that we're up for the challenge as long as we continue with the collaborative approach and really keep in mind what's the intent of the restrictions. And it's not to stop access to business. It's really to make sure that we have the minimum in mind about food safety, but to let people have a space that they can work in without a full investment.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. All right. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question's a little different. It's on the packaging. And as food, when you're looking at food safety and food inspections with plastics and plastic wraps and the phthalates, but also the PFOAs and PFOSs, the different chemistry that's involved in that, are you looking at the impacts on the packaging on food? Are you just only looking at the food? Because I think we've had in another committee issues brought up even about composting because of their retention of some of the materials that are in the plastic being commingled with the food waste, which then gets composted. So as we know, some of these are very persistent in the environment. So is the department looking at packaging impacts on the food separate from actual the food content?
Ms. Simon.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative. The way that we address that is actually the definition of food ingredient is very broad. And so we are consistent with the federal government in that use of food ingredient. And right now, food packaging, if there's going to be any movement into the food product just through contact or normal use, it's actually considered and evaluated as a food additive as part of that. So we ourselves are not doing specific academic assessments within my division. We do inspections in order to see conformance with the regulation. So on a day-to-day basis, one of the things that our staff are evaluating is ensuring that the packaging materials that either food manufacturers or distributors or wherever they encounter it during their inspections, that it's appropriate for the materials, so appropriate for the foods that they're seeing it in. So we do enforce that food additive and food use as FDA does, and that it would have to be an approved material for those uses. And if it's not, we do have the authority to prevent its further use, but that's the limits of how it is that we address packaging.
Representative Hansen, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so does your lab have the ability to test the food for packaging materials seeping into the food? Do you have that ability, right? And if maybe that's the first question.
Yeah. Ms. Simon.
Madam Chair and Representative, I don't have that answer readily available, but we can get back to you with that.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Do you have additional comments?
I believe I have just a little bit more.
Okay.
So another element of our program that I want to make sure is highlighted and understood is our rapid response team. So our rapid response team manages our outbreak response. So they work very closely and in collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Health Epidemiology Unit. And they essentially ensure that we can track down and determine distribution of products in Minnesota. And the idea is to prevent unnecessary exposure to hazardous food and commerce. So, and they serve both our in our commercial feed as well as our manufactured food program. And it's definitely an innovation and approach, and it is renowned quite nationally in how it is that we're able to quickly identify product and have it removed from commerce and really get down to all the way back to where contamination sources occurred so that we can ensure that we have better practices among the industry in the long term. And overall, all of our inspection programs are developed based on national regulatory program standards. So we have independent audits, either from the federal government or other agencies that come in and do quality assurance testing related to our overall program development to make sure that it's on sound principles and that it can work effectively. Challenges and trends, we've touched on a number of them. It's, you know, there's a lot of movement going on. And so right now our licensing structure, our registration information, and a lot of the ways in which our division was originally designed, it's around a system that's evolving more quickly than regulation can process sometimes. And so this is where that food innovation team and a collaborative approach is something that we really are shifting into, because there's innovation in sales distribution models with people ordering their groceries online and doing custom shopping. There's a lot more facilities that want to do mixed processing. And so we're really looking at ways that we can be more innovative in how it is that we do our inspections to ensure that the food safety principles are upheld and the regulations are in place are in conformance, but that it's not becoming a barrier for individuals to do innovative development, either within a particular market niche or whether it's developing new product areas where it's food items that have not necessarily been handled in certain ways before. So it is a bit of a balance between the science and making sure that the science is there to ensure the safety, but that's one of the challenges that we deal with. And again, there's additional challenges with the outbreak response and how it is that we can move regulatory requirements into that space of prevention and good practices and promotion. My last slide that I have is just the breakup of our funding structure. So again, we've got general appropriations. Most of that general appropriation is actually for our manufactured food and retail programs. They do not have dedicated licensing or registration funds. We additionally have a number of grants through the FDA. And then dedicated funds is mainly for our commercial feed and pet food programs, in addition to our contracts, the federal contracts that we do. So,
all right. We have at least one more question. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, how did the department get into licensing and inspecting wineries and breweries? There was one back in my district that they said they threw their hands up and got out of the business because it was so onerous. And is that something relatively new, or how did that become part of your jurisdiction?
Ms. Simon.
Madam Chair and Representative. So the definition of food does include alcoholic beverages. That's consistent with FDA's interpretation. So we have been licensing and inspecting them for as long as I have worked for the department. I think what we have done recently is clarify that. Because we've also clarified the definition of food when it comes to some other areas of license sales and things like that as well. So I believe that if there were some issues, I think it had more to do with the fact that it was potentially an area that we were just unaware that there was a lack of clarity before.
All right. Representative, anybody else have a question? I'm just looking at facial language there. Okay. I think I don't see any other questions. Okay, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just asking Representative Anderson if he knew, so forgive me. Does the Department of Agriculture, do they inspect distilleries?
Ah, Ms. Simon.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, we do. All forms of alcohol through manufacturing and distributed are considered food and would potentially fall under licensing unless they meet a specific exclusion.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, thank you. All right, I don't see any other questions, so you've concluded your comments, is that correct?
Yes, I have.
So then thank you very much, Ms. Simon. Appreciate it. So we've concluded the packet that we have, so now people can put that into your three-ring binder before you leave today so that everybody has that. And we have two bills, so Representative Lippert, if you want to... this is a bill, you do have the information in your packet, House File 1267. There is the potential for a fiscal note, however, MDA has indicated they can absorb the cost, so there won't be a fiscal note for right now, and we are going to be moving this because government operations needs to see it because it's a council, so it's extending that. So, Representative Lippert, if you would please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 1267 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
All right. And so you can go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So the state currently has an organic advisory task force. This task force has been in operation since 2003, and it advises both the Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota on issues related to the organic agriculture industry. And as the task force is comprised of stakeholders in that industry as well. The task force has been doing good work, and periodically it needs to be renewed. And so it's set to expire in 2019, and this bill does one simple thing. It simply extends the work of the Organic Advisory Task Force through 2024. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Bruce Miller to say a little bit more about what the Organic Advisory Task Force does.
All right. Mr. Miller, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, Bruce Miller with Minnesota Farmers Union. Minnesota Farmers Union is pleased to support House File 1267, which, as Representative Lippert said, extends the Organic Advisory Task Force, which represents organic farmers, retailers, educators, certifiers, consumers, and the public. And if I've forgotten anyone, it's probably in the bill itself. This task force advises the Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota on policies concerning organic production in Minnesota and weighs in on how effectively to provide outreach, education, research, technical assistance to the greater organic community. Task force members offer a tremendous amount of experience, expertise, and talents, and the organic sector is vital to Minnesota's agricultural economy, and we need strong involvement from the organic community to make sure that that community and that that sector continues to thrive. Minnesota, as you've heard us say many times, is a big tent when it comes to agriculture. Organics in Minnesota. Minnesota was an early adapter of organics going back to the 1960s and 1970s, and it has grown. And we're somewhere, I don't have the exact number right now, but I think we're somewhere between fifth and seventh in the nation at this point. This task force represents a broad swath of Minnesota, north to south, and in speaking with Amber Hansen Glazer with the Farm Bureau, just before this meeting, they would join Farmers Union in asking for this extension of this program. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Lippert, thank you, and we hope that this can move forward with great progress.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. And we have a question. Representative Wozlewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lippert, I know that noted that there are reports that are provided for us to look at about kind of what the task force is doing. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if you could just provide one or two examples of some of the work that they've done, if you happen to know that off the top of your head.
So,
Representative Lippert.
Sure, thank you. I thank you, Representative Wozlewick. I have the report of the 2015 report in front of me, and that is a report comes out every 5 years. And so in this report, in the executive summary, it talks about just an overview of kind of where the organic industry is. As Bruce Miller mentioned, in the top 10 for nearly, in the state, we're in the top 10 for nearly 20 types of crops and livestock. So it gives kind of a sense of where we are and then also of specific ideas to both the University of Minnesota and the Agriculture Department of Agriculture on ways to promote organics within our state and ways to sustain and support producers in that industry too.
Thank you. I do note that the fiscal note is in process, but I know that maybe somebody from Minnesota Department of Ag could testify just to make sure that our intention of them being able to absorb the cost would be accurate. So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Miller.
Better.
So welcome to the committee. If you just want to state your name and be able to just respond to that. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Excuse me. My name is Peter Chesset, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It is my understanding that the department is capable of absorbing the costs of the task force, and I'd just like to state that the department supports the extension, and we have certainly appreciated the partnership we've had with the task force over the years.
Yes. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lippert, thank you for bringing this forward. It's an important program, obviously. I just read an article. This is a question to the department. I just read an article yesterday about the rampant fraud as far as products being sold into the organic market. They're not actually organic. And so what is the state of Minnesota doing to ensure the quality of this program and the integrity of the certification process?
Mr. Chesson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, I have heard concerns about the fraud issue. I have to admit that I do not know specifics in terms of what the department is doing to address that particular issue, but I'd be happy to get you information on that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Tessa.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify? Anyone from the public who wants to testify in support or in opposition to this bill? I don't see anybody else. Do you have any other comments to make, Representative Lippert?
I just heard support of this bill.
Thank you. So you would like to renew your motion regarding... Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I renew my motion that House File 1267 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
All right. The motion is before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 1267 is recommended to be referred to Ways and Means. So we have the next bill. It is House File 820. And Representative Schumacher is here. Welcome to the committee. And
thank
we have
you, Madam Chair.
We're pleased to see you, and we have Representative Hamilton, who has, you know, he has kind of a grin on his face, like he might be thinking of doing something with this bill, but let's hear what he has to, Representative Hamilton.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want my seatmate here, Representative Schumacher, know how much I support his bill and bringing this forward. I'd like to move at this time, Madam Chair, House File 820 to be recommended to be referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
Thank you very much. So we've got the bill before us. Representative Schumacher, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill today, and thank you, members, for giving me a little bit of time this morning. The bill in front of you today exempts truck washing stations from the open-air swine basin regulations. The issue was brought to me by a constituent who was unable to make the hearing today, but I understand that her testimony was submitted and is in your packets this morning. Basically, a truck wash was built by this constituent for her company to wash and sanitize the trucks after hauling livestock, and the original permit that they had requested categorize the truck wash as an open-air swine basin, which it isn't. And so this constituent has been working with good faith with MPCA to find resolution on this, and this is what they were able to come up with, and I believe that MPCA will be testifying to that point. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks, Representative Schumacher. So I think we'll have a couple of people, Greta Gauthier and Jeff Smith, are both on the schedule here, if you'd want to come down and be able to provide some testimony. And we do have, as Representative Schumacher said, we do have the information from who is going to be Joan Miller, who is going to be providing some testimony, but we do have the written statement in the packet. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself, and then you can provide some support.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Greta Gauthier. I am Assistant Commissioner for Legislative and Intergovernmental Affairs at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And before that, I worked at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, so it's great to be back in the Agriculture Committee. Madam Chair, House File 820 is almost identical to a bill that we worked on with Representative Schumacher and his constituent and others last year. That bill did pass both houses, but got caught up in the veto of the Omnibus Prime Bill in 2018. So this bill would allow basins at truck washing facilities to be exempt from the installation of a cover. In the last few years, we've permitted probably about a half a dozen new truck washes across the state. And for newer members, the issue here is that for biosecurity reasons, these truck washes are needed to wash livestock trucks generally in between livestock truck visits to various feedlot sites so as not to contaminate one site to the other. Obviously, they also wash regular trucks that haul freight down the freeway all the time. So the trucks that these truck washes service are both livestock industry related and related to other industries. So this bill, in the way we have it put together, does retain the MPCA's ability to protect public health and the environment from any manure that may be washed into these truck basins. And we are fine with the bill before you, and I'm happy to take questions. And I have one of our division directors here, too, in case there are specific questions.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Gauthier? Okay, I don't see any questions. Representative Anderson, I apologize.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We have a few minutes. Not quite sure what the Omnibus Prime Bill was last year, but this bill passed out of the Ag Committee and I think went to Environment and was part of the Omnibus Bill. But anyway, so this bill is largely the same as the one we had last year. Is that correct?
Yes.
Madam Chair, yes.
It's out there.
Representative Anderson, yes.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Nobody else? Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify in support? Yes. Please come on down. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Preisler. Please identify yourself and continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Preisler with the Minnesota Pork Producers Association, and just wanted to ask for all of your support for this bill and thank Representative Schumacher for bringing it forward. As you've heard, I think we're all in agreement from a standpoint of that this is something that's important. Quite honestly, we need more truck washes, not fewer, and this is a really good step to help to avoid an unnecessary cost that a proposer of a truck wash would have without providing any sort of environmental benefit. So we're also grateful that the Pollution Control Agency has seen that also. And so, again, just ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of the testifier? I don't see any. All right. So if anyone else in the audience? Otherwise, I believe Representative Schumacher, any closing comments?
Thank you to the committee, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. All right, so Representative Hamilton, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 820 be recommended to be referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
All right, that motion is before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 820 is recommended to be referred to the Environment Policy Committee. So
thank you,
Representative Schumacher. So we don't have any other bills before us today. We will meet on Thursday. We'll hear from the administration regarding Governor Walz's budget recommendations, and we have three bills on the agenda for Thursday. So we'll have a busy day, and with that, meeting adjourned.